Welcome to Historically St. Pete, a weekly conversation where we explore the truths and sometimes the myths of the people and events that created the Sunshine City. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Rui Frias, and I have the best job in town. I'm the executive director of the St. Pete Museum of History. The Museum of History has been sharing the stories of the Sunshine City for 102 years, and we're so happy to share those stories with you here on Radio St. Pete. So listen, beginning with the 100th anniversary of the Benoit first flight and the opening of the Mirror Lake Library in 2014. It seems like the city, we've been celebrating all kinds of 100 birthdays in St. Petersburg. Even the Museum of History turned 102 years ago. But 2025 is exceptionally busy in marking the centennial of so many places and events throughout the Sunshine City.
So, Rui, are you going to take us for a trip back 100 years on this new year, 2025, back to 1925, St. Pete?
That's right. So imagine we're back in 1925. So, as you know, all the residents and the visitors that were here already, even though it was a little bit early for the tourist season, but, you know, some of them would come early, as they prepared to celebrate the new year and all the festivities, they were still recovering from like a month-long party. I mean, this city started partying in November of 2024, because what happens? We opened the Gandy Bridge, the first bridge ever connecting St. Petersburg and Tampa. That created a flood of people coming into St. Petersburg from, you know, the east part of the state. The Coliseum actually opens on the same day the Gandy Bridge opens, right? The finest dance hall in the south. The Sereno and the Princess Martha Hotels both open right before the end of the year, and they battled to be their first million-dollar hotel that opens in St. Petersburg. And, of course, we can't forget the Shuffleboard Club. The world's largest shuffleboard club also opens in late 1924, getting ready for that tourist season that's going to start in January.
So what happened before the New Year's champagne was stored away?
So 25, it just continues. And, you know, from 1922, basically, in 1926, we're like the hottest real estate market in the nation, right? Not just homes, but businesses, hotels, and everything. But 1925, I mean, holy cow, this was the year that we kind of go crazy here in St. Pete. And when we look at the development today that's happening all throughout downtown, the building and the cranes and all this stuff, I think it really pales in comparison to what happened during this time period. So let's look at 1925. So before the champagne was even stored away, right? Everybody in St. Pete lifted the glass to the opening of the St. Pete Kennel Club on January 3rd. Those greyhounds ran for the first time in St. Pete on that day. All right, it was later known as Derby Lane. It was the world's oldest greyhound track when they ran the final race on December 27th, 2020. And baseball fans, right? Baseball has been in the news a lot lately. But baseball fans here in St. Petersburg, I mean, we fell in love with baseball, you know, way back in 1914 when Major League Baseball came here for the first time for spring training. But 1925 put St. Pete on the baseball map. On February 23rd, about 5,000 baseball fans attended the dedication of the Crescent Lake Baseball Park. Later that same day, the New York Yankees held their first practice in what would later be renamed Huggins Single Field in 1962. And, you know, we had a conversation with some Yankees executives two spring trainings ago, and they still claim today that they're the reason why St. Petersburg isn't a podunk little fishing town, that when the Yankees came to town, they're the ones who actually created what we now know as St. Petersburg.
Well, there's, you know, and you know, sports is really got a long history, but what else happened? What happened in the spring of 1925? I mean, the town just grew and grew. So tell us a little bit about that.
It did. I mean, we kept expanding our borders. In the spring, the whole Pinellas Point area and a large tract of land north of town were annexed by the city, increasing the size of St. Pete by nearly 50 square miles. This was the largest one-time increase of the size of our city ever in our history. And, you know, we were busting at the seams, you know, because you got to imagine everybody back then, you know, prior to 24, 25, all lived, worked, kind of hung out near the downtown area, and our population continued to grow. Later in, you know, early June, Elder Jordan, who was a prolific African-American developer here in St. Petersburg, builds the Jordan Dance Hall on 22nd Street South. It soon renamed, right, the Manhattan Casino, and becomes one of the most important and influential music venues in the South. Can you imagine, like, very young stars like B.B. King, Ray Charles, Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, even James Brown later on, perform there for the city's black population. Because you got to remember that the city, unfortunately, and still unbelievably so, was incredibly segregated back then. So when those acts would, you know, show up at the Coliseum and perform at the Coliseum, the African American population weren't permitted by law to go see them. So the Manhattan Casino becomes part of the Chitlin Circuit, and those performers head there after they perform at the Coliseum.
You know, and it's so interesting, Rui, because today, of course, St. Pete and downtown St. Pete is still a hotbed of jazz with the Al Downing Tampa Bay Jazz Association, with the jazz that's going on at the Palladium, and also over at the Warehouse Arts District. So what started in 1925 is really a milestone today for all of the great musicians we see here. So I understand there was also, in 1925, the new high school was built. Or construction started.
It did. So construction starts on a new high school on the outskirts of town. So this is basically farmland and cow pastures out on Fifth Avenue North and 25th Street. The city had already outgrown two previous St. Pete high schools that were constructed around the Mirror Lake area in just 12 years. So, I mean, that shows you how fast, really, our population was growing here in St. Petersburg, that we kept needing to build bigger and bigger schools.
You know, and it's so interesting now because, of course, today that school is home to the Kenwood Market on Sunday. And, gosh, and it was built in 1925. Now, I understand you have a favorite 1925 story, somebody near and dear to your heart.
So I'm very fortunate that in my office, I get to sit at his desk, and above my head is a beautiful oil portrait of him. So near and dear to my heart, yeah, Huckster from Tennessee. He arrives in St. Petersburg in 1925. He opens a small drugstore on the corner of what was then 9th Street, now MLK, and 2nd Avenue South. But by the 1960s, James Earl Doc Webb will grow Webb City into 8 square city blocks, attracting 60,000 shoppers a day. That's more people that can fit in Raymond James Stadium. So that shows you how popular it was and the marketing genius that he was to bring people to the city to shop, basically.
Well, and then culture. I mean, what about this Capitol Theater? I did not know about this. And this was, what, early fall 1925, an open-air theater opens?
It was. We had about three or four of them. And the Playhouse actually still stands today on Central and 19th Street, right by the interstate. And they were open. They were called open-air theaters because basically the projection screen and, you know, all the equipment was obviously in a structure, but you would be sitting outside looking into that, watching the movie. Because you got to remember, there's no air conditioning, right? So it would get kind of stuffy to sit inside an enclosed theater during, to watch a movie. So the idea of being in there, and especially the Capitol opens, you know, like you said, in early fall, and it's constructed, it looks like a Spanish courtyard, right? So, you know, it's like you're outdoors in a Spanish courtyard. Opens to much fanfare. It quickly makes headlines. For instance, actor Buster Keaton, you know, the famous silent film actor, he attended the opening of one of his films at the Capitol Theater. Now, he was in St. Pete a lot, actually, because he was an investor in the movie studio that was built on Wheaton's Island, and left St. Petersburg because it was just getting impossible to make films on Wheaton's Island because, again, no air conditioning, mosquitoes as big as pigeons out there, right? So this was a nightmare for them. But what really put them on the front page of the paper happened on November 15th in 1925. The owner and two employees were arrested for violating a city ordinance that prohibited operating a motion picture show on a Sunday. So basically, I mean, I still remember this as a kid. I remember when Publix was closed on Sundays, right? But it wasn't a secret. I mean, 2,000 people showed up to the Capitol that day to watch the film and witness the arrests. They did this on purpose to show how ridiculous this ordinance was, that you couldn't go to a movie on a Sunday.
So it wasn't just drinking during Prohibition and fishing and golf that was a favorite pastime. I understand construction and growth was like incredibly like boom, boom, and boom. Tell us more.
Out of control. I mean, you know, forget fishing, golf, or even drinking, right, during Prohibition. I mean, growth and construction were the favorite pastimes in St. Pete in 1925. More hotels, apartments, homes were built in the first 9 months of 1925 and then all of 12 months of 1924. So it looked like there was going to be no end to this. But the funny thing is, I mean, and this of course is happening all over Florida, right? But especially here in St. Petersburg. But the excitement wasn't shared by everyone. I mean, a lot of northern states started warning their residents it's really bad land deals in Florida. Because remember, you know, we can sell you some good swamp land down here, right? So Minnesota actually releases from its immigration bureau a warning telling residents to avoid buying property in Florida. And Ohio actually passes a bill that prohibits Florida land transactions in the state of Ohio. So this was, you know, so people were starting to find out now that you're buying land sight unseen and you're showing up and it's not really what you were promised here in the state of Florida. I mean, you know, we are Florida. We just, you know, say things enough times and people believe it, right?
But that didn't stop the St. Pete developers or the Chamber of Commerce from convincing people. So tell us a little bit about that.
So in 1925, the city starts talking to the Investment Bankers Association of America. They hold an annual convention, and these are banks, lending, you know, lending groups. Basically, anyone that is a major investor in the United States was part of this association, and they hold these annual conventions. And mostly, of course, they're in northern cities, like Chicago or New York or Philadelphia and those places. So they finally convinced them to move this annual meeting in December to St. Petersburg. Why be cold, right, when you can come down here and be in the warmth of our sun and have your meeting here? So, of course, you know, the back end of this was, you know, the city leaders were hoping to secure more investors to invest. Because remember, 1925, we had more land than we knew what to do with, right, at that time period. So we wanted more investors here. But when the members of this association arrive in St. Petersburg for this meeting, it begins to rain. And what happens in St. Pete in the wintertime after it rains? It gets cold. And that rain was actually followed by record cold here in our city. So these folks got back on the trains and headed up north. This was a sign of, you know, for things to come in 1926 and 1927, a pretty bad omen, actually.
Well, you know, there was a soundtrack. We go bum bum bum, but 25 ended with a serious bang, especially for hotels. Rui, tell us about that.
It did, because visitors were coming by the train load here, and the then St. Petersburg Times actually ran a story in, I think, it's September of 1925 that said, you know, 1926 was going to be our greatest year ever when it came to visitors and investors coming to St. Petersburg. So like the Hotel Dennis opens up across the street from Williams Park, built by the same folks who built the Princess Martha. And then the Pennsylvania Hotel opens just a block down the road on 4th Street. In the Pennsylvania, obviously, both hotels are still open. But the historic Pennsylvania is now a Marriott there on 4th Street. But people really started getting excited about these major hotels. I mean, some of these hotels we're talking about were anywhere from 50 to 100 rooms. But then, like, retired millionaire Thomas Rowe begins construction of a pink palace just north of the town of Pasigrill in the newly named village of Don Cesar. So, of course, now we know it's the Don Cesar Hotel on St. Pete Beach. But back then, Pasigrill and Don Cesar were its own little towns out there on the beach. And he was in no rush. A lot of these folks, like the Hotel Dennis in the Pennsylvania, were in a hurry to get these hotels open for the winter or the tourist season of 1926, which would start in January. But Thomas Rowe said numerous times that he wasn't in a rush. He wanted to make sure that his hotel was perfect. And, you know, it would be the finest around. It actually doesn't open until about 2 years later when it was finished being built. But here in downtown St. Pete, Imer Vinoy Lochner opens the jewel of our waterfront, the 325-room Vinoy Park Hotel. It actually opens on New Year's Eve, 1925, to huge fanfare, flowing champagne, you name it, right? The hotel, the pool, the golf course, other amenities. basically turns the Vinoy into the winter residence of the rich and famous here in St. Petersburg. And he was in such a hurry to get it open for the tourist season that when they had that grand opening on New Year's Eve in 1925, they were still laying carpet and painting the walls on the fifth floor of the hotel. So, but they managed to get it open. It was pretty amazing.
Wow. You know, a lot of things happened in 1925. And, you know, 2025, that's 100 years ago. There were cars and there were electric lights. And now when you think about it, you know, the technology, I mean, there was no technology, right? Nothing to speak of.
Typewriters, come on.
Typewriters.
We love typewriters.
And what was the newspaper in 1925, Rui?
Well, we were in two of them. We had the Evening Independent and the St. Petersburg Times. By that time, they were both dailies. The Evening Independent was the afternoon paper, obviously, and the Times was the morning paper.
Well, folks, you have been listening to Rui Farias, the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History, which will boast a new restaurant opening in January. And a lot of things coming up, a lot of fun events. Rui, can you just give us a quick look at what's coming up in January for you?
Absolutely. So we've got our Happy Hour with the Historian happening in early January, and you can learn all about the pioneering female pilots of Florida. So that's going to be pretty cool Happy Hour. We've got some trolley tours that take you, historic trolley tours that take you through downtown St. Pete. They also take you to the west side of our city. And we have a civil rights trolley tour as well. And of course, we can't forget our partnership with Tampa Bay Watch. We do historic boat tours that go along our downtown waterfront.
Well, and really with baseball, you know, getting to be baseball crazy again, you're going to have some big news. We won't share that with you now, but of course, for those of you who have visitors coming into St. Pete, the museum has the most incredible gallery. Tell us a little bit about that because people are going to be pouring in to see it.
Well, the folks that are coming for baseball, and if you have any inkling of an interest in baseball, you'll love our Schrader's Little Cooperstown exhibit. It is the world's largest collection of autographed baseballs. And even if you're not a gigantic baseball fan, a lot of the actual balls and the stories we tell, so you're not just walking into a room looking at, you know, a bunch of, you know, signed baseballs. The exhibit is built that we use baseball to teach American history. So there's a lot of baseballs that are signed by, you know, historic figures, presidents, politicians. Like one of my favorite balls actually is a baseball signed by Fidel Castro. And because of the story that goes with it, because Fidel Castro was offered a major league baseball contract, which he turned down to go back to Cuba to start this little revolution. So I always wonder, you know, what the world would be like, you know, how different it would be had he signed that contract.
You know, Rui always has something unique and inventful to tell us. So for those of you who want more, please go to RadioSaintPete.com. In the audio blogs, click on Pound Historically St. Pete or Pound Rui Farias. Visit HistorySaintPete.org for more details on our exhibits and events. Rui, parting words for New Year's, and do you have a resolution?
Yeah, it's the one I do every year to get fit, but I don't know how that's going to work out.
Well, you know, as a former PR for the Rowdies soccer team and a soccer coach, I'm sure it's going to happen this year. So, Radio St. Pete folks, thank you, Rui, for being with us today.
Thank you.